This is Real Estate Rookie episode 386. Where do you draw the line when it comes to your tenants and appliances? My name is Ashley Kerr, and I'm here with Tony J. Robinson.
And welcome to the Real Estate Rookie podcast, where every week, three times a week, we're bringing you the inspiration, motivation, and stories you need to hear to kickstart your investing journey. And today we're going to talk about things to think about when buying properties in a vacation market. What exactly is BRRRR, PITI, and ARV, plus so much more broken down in this episode? We'll be evaluating a BRRRR deal and how to analyze the fundamentals to make sure your numbers are correct. So we'll get into all of this and more. Now, don't forget, you can submit your questions so Ash and I can answer on this podcast. Just head over to biggerpockets.com/reply. Again, guys, we want to hear from the rookie audience. We want to answer your questions. We want to highlight what's going on in your business. So again, head over to biggerpockets.com/reply.
Okay, today's question, our first one is from Jordan Wisdom. I have a question on the BRRRR strategy. First of all, Tony, speaking of BRRRR, it is freezing right now. In the end of March, and I also got a ton of snow last night, so I can relate to this word right here. Okay, so Jordan goes on to say, specifically on the cash out refinance part, when you do the cash out refinance, it's being refinanced at the higher appraised value. This would result in a higher monthly payment. So when running your numbers, are you using the PITI of the ARV or the PITI of the before repair value? I'm thinking you would have to use the PITI of the ARV to make sure the deal will still work after the cash out refi. Is this correct or am I missing something? So I think first what we need to do is kind of call out and explain a couple of those words that he called out there. So first, a BRRRR. You're going to buy the property. You're going to rehab the property, fix it up. You're going to rent out the property. Then you're going to go to the bank and you're going to refinance it and pull some of your money back out or all of your money back out. And then you're going to repeat it. When you get that money back, you're going to go and take it and buy another property and do the same thing. You're adding value to the property. You're adding income to the property.
Yeah. And then some of the other terms that we've called out here as well, we have ARV and PITI. So ARV stands for after repair value. And basically, this is what the property will be worth after you complete all of your renovations on the deal. So say you buy a property for $100,000, you put $50,000 into the rehab, and now it's worth $300,000, your ARV in that situation would be $300,000. And then PITI is principal, interest, taxes, and insurance. So it's basically like, you know, what most people refer to as your mortgage payment, your principal, interest, taxes, and insurance payment. So I think the first thing that I'd say is, it's a great question, Jordan. And luckily for you, there is a tool, a resource that Bigger Pockets offers to help you make sure you're doing this math the right way. Because analyzing a property as a BRRRR is slightly different than analyzing a property as a traditional rental, because you're absolutely right. You want to make sure that the property not only cash flows at your initial mortgage payment amount, your initial principal, interest, tax, and insurance, but that it also cash flows on the back end once you refinance. Now, Bigger Pockets, if you go to biggerpockets.com/tools, we actually have a BRRRR calculator, okay? So you can use that to make sure that you're accounting for all of those things. But the short answer to the question, Jordan, is yes, you want to make sure that you're actually leveraging that post-refinance PITI to make sure it's still profitable.
So the next thing to kind of call out here is talking about the PITI, okay? So the principal, interest, the taxes, and insurance. And usually you think of this as your mortgage payment, like Tony said, and you have stuff in escrow. But even if you are purchasing this property in cash to begin with, or maybe you're using a hard money lender or private money lender or the line of credit off your primary, you still are going to have to pay the taxes and the insurance in this process too. So even if you're saying, oh, well, I'm not going to be paying that mortgage payment because I'm paying cash, think about the holding costs that you're still going to be paying, even utilities on the property too. I don't think your contractor is going to want to work in winter with no heat and no lights on to see what they're doing. So all these holding costs will be calculated when you use the BiggerPockets calculator to do your BRRRR report, or if you build out your own, but make sure you're including all of these holding costs when you first purchase property before you go and do that refinance. And as far as the time period of doing that refinance, you want to make sure you are accounting for enough time to actually repair the property. And you want to make sure that your property is completely done and rehabbed by the time the bank is going to do the appraisal. So talking with your lender and finding out how long does it actually take to usually get the appraiser out to the property after I submit my loan application. So if you know you kind of have 2 weeks there, then you want to make sure that you're applying for that loan. And by the time that appraiser is coming out to look at the property, that your property is done. And then you're also looking at, you're still going to have those same holding costs until the loan actually finalizes. So how long is it taking your lender to actually close on doing a refinance too?
Yeah. And I think the only last thing that I'd add on to that as well is sometimes, Jordan, you can, well, I guess two things I'd want to mention. First, that's the benefit of using a calculator, is that it forces you to make sure you're accounting for all these different things, like Ashley was talking about, your different holding costs and how long is a rehab going to take, how long before you refinance. So again, biggerpockets.com/tools to use that calculator, because it's going to force you to recognize all of those things. But the second thing I'd say, and this was actually the situation I fell into for my first BRRRR, was the bank that I was working with, they did the construction debt and they were giving me the long-term debt as well. So they gave me like a quasi combination loan of sorts, right? So my first loan was a 12-month interest only for the rehab, and then I got a 30-year fix there afterwards. But they actually did a, I can't remember what the phrase was. So basically they looked at the current condition of the property, they looked at my scope of work, and they gave me an estimate of what they thought the ARV was going to be as well. So I had my agent give me an ARV, I had the bank themselves give me an ARV. So it allowed me to be pretty confident in my numbers when I was doing that calculation, because I had two different frames of reference for estimating that after repair value. So just something to look through, Jordan. You know, if you're working with like a small local lender or credit union, they might give you that kind of service. I don't know, Ash, have you seen any hard money lenders do that before, where they're actually estimating your ARV for you?
No, I think they're verifying what you're giving them though. They're definitely verifying that. I have had a hard money lender, when I needed an extension on a loan, come and send a broker to do a broker appraisal. So they actually didn't hire an appraisal company. They sent out a broker who did an as-is appraisal on the property. I guess not even appraisal, but put a market value on the property as is. And then also they redid what the ARV would be based on how far the project was at that point. To kind of sum up this question, the correct answer would be that you're going to need to actually include both of those. So you're going to need to include your payments, every monthly bill you have while the project is going on. So that is before, you know, the after repair value. So while you're doing the repairs on the property during that timeline. And then you're also going to have to look at the after repair value and what your financing terms are, what your monthly payments are after that. So you want to make sure the deal will work in both of those segments. So during that time the property is being rehabbed, can you pay out of pocket, or do you have somebody that's going to, you know, loan you the money to pay those monthly expenses? You want to make sure that, say you have $30,000 for the rehab and that's what you're paying the contractor, but you have $2,000 a month in holding costs. Are you going to be able to pay that for 6 months while that project is being done? So make sure you're accounting for that. Then after the project is done, you're going to have a new mortgage payment. You're going to have your insurance will switch on the property too, because you're no longer a vacant property that's under rehab. You now have a tenant in place and have a landlord policy. So in most cases, your insurance will be cheaper and you're going to still be paying your property taxes too. So you want to actually take into account both of those. And that's what the BiggerPockets BRRRR calculator can help you do too.
Last thing, the other cool part about the calculator, guys, is that it saves pretty much every deal that you've done if you're a pro member. And I just logged into my BiggerPockets Pro account and I can see the very first real estate deal I ever actually bought is still sitting in here as one of the deals that I ran through. So it's also cool to be able to go back and see, you know, hey, how did my initial analysis compared to what the deal actually did.
Does it have a date on it?
When was that? It just says 4 years ago. So it doesn't give me the exact date on when I ran it. It just says 4 years ago. And it was actually pretty spot on, because I think it on the cash flow here was saying that I was making about 167 a month. And I was somewhere in that like 150 to 200 range on an average basis. So it was pretty close.
You know what? That would be interesting to go back to some of mine. Like the first one I did was 7 years ago. I just pulled it up. I have 12 pages of Bigger Pockets calculator reports I've done. And it would be interesting to go back to one of those that I did. Like, here's my sixth unit that I did 6 years ago in here. And yeah, that's actually pretty spot on too. 21% cash on cash return. Our next question is going to be on a motel in a vacant market. And luckily we have an expert for that. So after we come back from the short break, I'm going to ask this question to Tony.
Are current interest rates making you depressed about cash flow? What if it didn't have to be that way? Rent to Retirement has 2.99% seller financing available on turnkey properties. You heard that right. That's a seller financed 2.99% interest rate where the average cash flow is over $900 per month. They also have options where you can put as low as 5% down on multiple investment properties with no PMI. Rent to Retirement is the nation's leading turnkey investment company that understands what it takes to be successful in today's dynamic real estate market. Their reputation speaks for itself with more 5-star reviews than any other company on the Bigger Pockets website. Rent to Retirement offers fully turnkey properties that are newly built or renovated, leased and managed, allowing you to invest with confidence in the markets that offer the best returns. To learn more, visit renttoretirement.com. That's renttoretirement.com. Or text REI to 33777. Again, text REI to 33777. We know, and you all know, why it's super important that good tenant screening is absolutely critical to your management process. Luckily, Rent Ready, the comprehensive property management software, has a new feature that makes tenant screening a complete breeze. In addition to TransUnion certified tenant screening, Rent Ready now offers proof of income verification. So Rent Ready's automatic tenant proof of income verification ensures an in-depth check of each applicant's financial stability and earnings. With Plaid certified tenant income and asset reports, you can see a potential tenant's income summary and total earnings by month. It's time to say goodbye to that whole gut check tenant screening and feel confident renting out your property with Rent Ready. Now, Rent Ready is included in your pro membership at Bigger Pockets. If you're not a pro, they're offering the 6-month plan for only $1. Visit rentready.com. That's RENTREDI.com and use the code BP Investor. That's BP, like Bigger Pockets, Investor for 6 months of Rent Ready for only $1.
Remember when you had to pay to get a lead's phone number? It was like the dark ages. Until Deal Machine made skip tracing a thing of the past. Now, with your Deal Machine plan, you'll get unlimited access to phone numbers and contact information for no extra cost. That's right, get high quality, reliable information trusted by leading financial institutions, all fully compliant with the federal Do Not Call list. Explore over 150 data points, including age, gender, marital status, occupation, and a ton more. Trust me, this is the data you need for off-market deals. With new filters, people flags, and color-coded phone numbers, lead management just got a ton easier. Ready to step up your investing game? Sign up for a Deal Machine plan today and gain immediate access to this unlimited treasure trove of contact information and phone numbers. Just head to dealmachine.com/BP. Transform your lead generation and deal-making strategies with Deal Machine. Sign up today and start exploring the unlimited possibilities at dealmachine.com/BP.
Okay, you guys, thank you so much for your patience. We are back to the episode and we have a question from Peter. Did anyone here buy a motel in a vacation market, like a regional vacation market? What are some pros and cons? I know Tony Robinson is in the middle of doing this. What kind of financial analysis should one do before buying? Are there any books that you would recommend? Is it the same as buying a short-term rental? Does it make sense to convert this to a self-check-in like an Airbnb cabin? I know these are a lot of questions, but I wanted to get some thoughts from people who have done this before. Well, Peter, you've come to the right place because we have Tony Robinson live right here with us to answer your question. So, Tony, let's take on the first one. What kind of financial analysis should one do before buying?
Yeah, I think before we even touch on that piece, because there was one little part about at the top of the question of Peter's, it was like buying a motel in a vacation market or like a regional vacation market. And I think that's the first thing I want to comment on, guys, is that there's, I believe, a tremendous amount of opportunity in some of the kind of secondary or tertiary vacation markets. I'll put this in context. We have two cabins in the Smoky Mountains right now. One's a 4-bed, one's a 5-bed. Both are probably worth over $1 million today. We paid $1 million for 13 units. One motel with 13 units is the same price as 4 bedrooms or 5 bedrooms in the Smoky Mountains. So it goes to show when you come outside of these super popular vacation destinations, you have the ability to go out and buy something that's going to do hopefully way more revenue. And for context, our 5-bedroom cabin last year did about $130,000 in revenue. This same motel, when we bought it from the kids, but when the dad, who was like the true owner, was running it, he capped out at just under $500,000 in annual revenue. So we have a 5-bedroom cabin worth $1 million at $130,000. We have a $1 million motel in Utah that did almost $500,000 when it was at its peak. So there's a lot of opportunity here. I don't know, Ash, I mean, you were looking at some stuff as well. I'm just curious, like, big markets versus the kind of smaller vacation destinations. What's been your take?
Yeah. So when I was looking at campgrounds, I was looking at 45 minutes outside of the city of Buffalo. So that would be that it was in, you know, driving distance for seasonal renters, because I didn't want it to be too far. Like I think about places that I would love to go to, but then I get exhausted thinking about how to get to them. Like Jackson Hole, Wyoming. Like I have heard from people, it's not very convenient unless maybe you have a private plane and they have a private airfield there. I don't know. But that is like the biggest thing for me as to how convenient is it to get to when looking at these campgrounds. And so I was very focused on finding seasonal renters where people would rent the whole season and it wasn't daily RV renters coming in, they'd rent for the whole season. And then they would come after work on Friday, spend the weekend there, drive back Sunday night or Monday morning to their house or their job, whatever that may be. But that's where it wasn't there wasn't any glowing huge resort or anything like that. I was more focused on, you know, smaller markets, smaller areas where it was more of a convenient escape, I would say.
And what's cool is, like, you know, me being in California, like I've never heard of the cities that you were looking at to buy to buy the RV parks. You being in New York, you've never heard about the stuff that I was looking at here on the West Coast. And I think that's the beauty of it, is that every part of the country has your own little pockets where people go to vacation that you probably only know if you're in that neck of the woods. So I just wanted to highlight that first for you, Peter, but the financial analysis question. So we obviously kind of cut our teeth buying single family short-term rentals. And the analysis on that is different than buying a commercial motel or hotel. So we had a calculator we built out for the single family side of things, but the analysis on, 13, 25, 50 units is a little bit different. So we actually hired someone, and it was your recommendation, us actually, the guy that you had found.
You know, it's so funny. I was on Upwork today and I saw that and I remembered you had said that. Yeah, he was great.
He was great, right? So he actually built out like a custom commercial hospitality analysis calculator for us. And we used that one and it worked out pretty well for us. Peter, there's another website. It's called Adventures in Commercial Real Estate. Adventures in Commercial Real Estate. And they have a bunch of tools you can download from their website as well. Some are free, some are paid. And we bought their like hotel calculator as well. So we've got a few different tools that we use, but the underlying process is still the same, right? You want to be able to project your income, project your expenses, understand your cash flow. It's just the method of projecting those are a little bit different. So when it came to the expenses, we looked at their P&Ls for the last couple of years to try and get a sense of what they were spending on all the different expenses that go along with 13 units. For the income side, we use what their current and previous performance was, but we also did a lot of competitive research to see, okay, we know that we're going to go in and renovate this thing, and we're ideally going to be like in the top 10% in this market. So it's like, what are the other top performing properties charging on a nightly basis on average? And we use that to kind of pull into our analysis as well. So building the tool was a big part. And then understanding how to really capture all the inputs was the second piece for us.
I think that's one of the hardest part is making that transition from a strategy you're already good at to a different strategy is figuring out what the expenses should be or are. Because obviously with your motel, the expenses are different than what they would be for a short-term rental. Like, for example, just the motel, it's hospitality. It's what do you have, like a hotel tax when you're short-term rental, you have a short-term rental license. Like even just in that aspect of knowing what those costs are that are associated with that, what kind of, expenses do you have for staff? Like you have two people, I think, on staff, you had said, for your motel?
Yeah, two people.
So just knowing and understanding those different costs is everything set, you know, it's not separately metered anymore. If you're used to doing multifamily, you actually have to cover the gas bill, how energy efficient is each of those units, things like that.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot that went into it. And there were some assumptions on our part, but I think doing our best to try and leverage the data that we had at hand to make those or to identify what those inputs should be. So that's the financial analysis piece.
Okay. So the next one is, are there any books that you would recommend?
We didn't read a single book about hotel investing. We just kind of took everything we learned about the short-term rental space and we applied it that way. So Bigger Pockets Publishing Team, shout out to you guys. Maybe I'll write the first hotel investing book for BP.
There we go. That's your proposal. Yeah. I just did like a quick Google search for hotel investing book. And the only thing that really came up was a hospitality financial management. Okay, the next question, is it the same as buying a short-term rental? Which you kind of did touch on, but maybe elaborate an example of some of the differences.
Yeah, I mean, similarities in the sense of like, is it like buying any other type of real estate? Yes, right? You want to get debt. You want to make sure that it cash flows. Like there are some fundamentals of real estate investing that still apply, but there are definitely differences that come along with it as well. So first for us was that we seller financed this deal, right? We bought it for $1 million. We put down 20% and then the sellers carried that other 800K on a 10-year note at 7% interest, which worked out pretty well for us. So that was, I think, a big difference for us. And then I think, honestly, the biggest challenge was just making sure that we had good data on the analysis side. Like we talked about the underwriting, but I feel like that was probably one of the biggest differences, was trying to make sure that we understood how to project the average daily rate. We understood how to really project the occupancy. So working through that was probably the bigger challenge. And then just the idea of like, we've done some rehabs on single family homes, but to rehab 13 units, that was a new thing for us as well. Like coming up with the design for a motel was a little bit different. And just, you know, I've never had a rehab budget that big before either. I think our rehab budget was like $330,000. So it was, you know, 3x what I've ever spent on a rehab before. So even just kind of going through that, there was a lot of learning curves as well. So, some similarities, but there's definitely some big things that I think were unique to the boutique side.
Okay. The next question is, does it make sense to convert this to a self check-in like an Airbnb cabin?
100%. That's our goal. And that's why we're so excited about this space is, I heard someone else, like another Airbnb guy, refer to it as a limited service hotel, aka self-check-in. So yeah, our goal is to, for every commercial property that we buy, allow for self-check-in. And I think just, you know, the demographic of travelers today, I prefer to not have to talk to someone, right? If I can just walk inside the hotel and go straight up to my room without having to communicate with someone, that is ideal for me. So we believe that Airbnb has conditioned a lot of travelers to feel that way as well. So our goal for this property, for every future acquisition, at least on the short term, is going to be to focus on self-check-in.
And actually, a lot of hotels are adapting that. I have Marriott, and usually stay at a Marriott, and they have the you know, you get your mobile key and you can just skip the front desk. And that is so convenient, especially when there's a line of people waiting to check in. And I just stayed at a Hilton too, and they did that too, the same. You just went right to your room. And then if you want an actual physical key, you can go down to the desk at some point and get one.
It is a trend. It is a trend, right? And I think the self-check-in probably isn't as foreign for travelers. I think the biggest thing is going to be like, what happens when they need something during their stay? And just making sure that they still feel comfortable reaching out digitally via the platform that they booked through to contact and things like that. Or, you know, so there's still some nuances that we have to try and work out, because our goal isn't just self-check-in, but it's really, we're not gonna have a front desk at all, right? So the only way that people will communicate with our team is either, you know, phone, text, or through the app that they booked through.
Okay. And then the last question is, that was it. That was the last one. The next thing was just, I know these are a lot of questions, but no, these are great questions, Peter, that I'm sure a lot of other people had if they are curious about getting into this space. Okay. If you want to learn more about Tony's motel experience, you can check out episode 367. Then we also had Adam Howard on episode 375. Today's next question is from Amarin Regan. I need some advice. We bought a property to flip a year ago. Long story short, everything that could go wrong did, and we put way more money into it than we originally intended. We tried to put the property on the market to simply pay off our loan debts and recoup our original investment. We had a hard money loan, a private loan, and numerous credit cards, personal loans. No bites at all. Our hard money is extended for 3 months, and I'm getting worried, thinking about renting, but worried about refinancing because, one, our credit is shot. Two, not sure a long-term rental will be able to cover the refinance cost. We live in a vacation area, so Airbnb is an option, but we have no money to furnish the property. I am overwhelmed with the stress of this and hoping maybe someone has a creative idea I am overlooking. This is definitely a tough situation to be in. And where do you want to start, Tony, as far as options? Why don't you talk a little bit about some kind of options if they were to put this as a short-term rental, maybe some creative ways to furnish the property?
Yeah, I think, you know, first, Amarin, I just want to give you kudos for having the courage to be vulnerable and share your experience, because a lot of people make it seem like it's all sunshine and rainbows being a real estate investor, but that is not the truth. There are some times when, like you said, everything that could go wrong does go wrong. So just know that you're not isolated in this happening to you. I had a flip that went bad last year. Ash has had deals that haven't gone well. If you talk to James Sandard, who's flipped more houses than anyone that I know, he always talks about how he's gotten beat up doing this as well. So just first know that it's part of the journey. So in terms of options here, if we talk about the short-term rental side of things, you said you live in a vacation area. The first thing I would do is try and understand how much revenue and profits that property could produce as a short-term rental. So run through the analysis. I like to use both AirDNA and Price Labs to analyze deals. I don't use like the revenue estimator tool where you just like plug in the address and spits out a number, but like really do the research to look at the underlying average daily rates and see where you think your property might fall. Are you in the top 10%, the top 25%, middle 25%, the bottom 25%, and just get a gauge of where you think that property might perform. And then compare that to your holding costs on these expenses to see if you can at least break even while you try and figure out another option. Now, in terms of the furnishing piece, I think you've got a couple options here, right? You could get really scrappy. You know, I met someone who took furniture out of their primary residence and put that into their short-term rental because they're like, hey, that's what we got to do to get this thing furnished. You can go the economic route of looking for, you know, Craigslist, Facebook Marketplace type furniture to really design on a budget. The other option is, you know, it sounds like you've maybe pulled out a few credit cards already, but that's another option as well. The other piece too here, Amarin, is that you could find a partner, right? If you find someone where you say, hey, if you bring in the furniture costs, you know, we'll split whatever the profits are 50-50 above the cost of actually holding the property. That way you're not on the hook for coming up with another $10,000 to $15,000 to furnish it. So I think first start with the analysis, make sure that it even makes sense, see if you're even profitable doing that. And if you are, then try and get creative on the furnishing side.
Yeah. So I think another idea to get creative is to looking at different ways. Is there any other way you can generate income off of this property? So is there a garage where you can, you know, if you do turn it into a long-term rental, can you increase the rent, you know, by letting them use the garage as storage or to put their car in? Is there a large lot where you can charge for people to park their RVs, things like that, to definitely get creative in? And then I would also start looking at the worst case scenario. Okay, the worst case scenario, you do need to refinance. And because your hard money loan is coming due, what I would do is I would refinance, even if you're not able to cover, and then pick up a second job or start some side hustles to cover it in the meantime until the property does sell or you are able to turn a profit doing an Airbnb. But I think if you wait and that hard money loan comes due and they start the process to foreclose on you, you're going to be in a worse situation. And I think refinancing the property will give you more time renting it out and figuring out what that deficit is in cash flow and how you can do a side hustle to cover that payment until the property does sell. That would be the process that I would take in this scenario.
Yeah. I think the other question too, and you didn't mention this, Amir, but how short are you on this deal, right? Like you said that you tried to list it just to try and pay everything off, but you weren't able to. Like how short are you? And do you have the ability maybe to just write the check? That's where we had to unflip the one bad for us last year is that we unfortunately had to write a significant check to make sure that everything got paid off. But if it's not too big, could you potentially do that? The other option is, could you find another lender to, replace this hard money debt? Right. So it could be, I don't know what the amount is. If it's a significant chunk, maybe it gets a little bit too expensive, but say that you're talking about a couple hundred thousand dollars here. Could you potentially find a private money lender in your network who can carry that note for another 12 months to give you some flexibility on the back end there, where they're going to pay off at least the hard money and looks like you got a mix of hard money and private money, right? Could you find another private money to pay that person off? So now you just have the credit cards and personal loans to worry about. But there's always different ways to kind of shuffle this debt around to extend the timeline a little bit. So I think that could be an option for you as well. And then the other piece is like, you said you got no bites, but could you just drop the price maybe a little bit more, right? Could you drop the price a little bit more and kind of see if there's an option there? Or last thing, and this is what James Danner talks about quite a bit, is there something you could add to the property to make it sell faster, right? Like, I don't know, could you add a second bedroom or a third bedroom or add an additional bathroom or something that would, again, a little bit more investment, but is there a small amount that you can invest to help you increase the ADR, I'm sorry, the ARV, so there are more people looking to actually purchase it?
Yeah, so like a great example of that would be adding a closet into a room. You know, James Zaynard from On the Market podcast for Bigger Pockets, you know, he says like adding the bedroom, like adding an additional room, and one of the cheap ways to do that is to just add a closet into a room that is an office, or to maybe, a lot of older homes, they have, a sitting room, a living room, and a dining room and a kitchen. Maybe you can take, you have an eat-in kitchen and turn the dining room into a bedroom, or take the formal family room and turn that into a bedroom too. So that's kind of one way to get more cost effective, is just having to add that closet in, and of course making sure it's, big enough size too. Okay, we're going to take a short break right now, but when we come back, we have a question about rent increases and fixing appliances.
We know, and you all know, why it's super important that good tenant screening is absolutely critical to your management process. Luckily, Rent Ready, the comprehensive property management software, has a new feature that makes tenant screening a complete breeze. In addition to TransUnion certified tenant screening, Rent Ready now offers proof of income verification. So Rent Ready's automatic tenant proof of income verification ensures an in-depth check of each applicant's financial stability and earnings. With Plaid certified tenant income and asset reports, you can see a potential tenant's income summary and total earnings by month. It's time to say goodbye to that whole gut check tenant screening and feel confident renting out your property with Rent Ready. Now, Rent Ready is included in your pro membership at Bigger Pockets. If you're not a pro, they're offering the 6-month plan for only $1. Visit rentready.com. That's RENTREDI.com and use the code BP Investor. That's BP, like Bigger Pockets, Investor, for 6 months of Rent Ready for only $1. Rookies, 2024 is the year to start protecting your rental properties with an LLC. But you don't have to do all the paperwork and filing yourself. Corporate Direct is your professional and affordable option for getting your LLC done right. They handle the state filings, draft your operating agreement, and act as your registered agent. They'll even help you comply with the Corporate Transparency Act, a new federal disclosure law affecting every real estate investor. Corporate Direct is a family business founded by attorney, author, and rich dad advisor Garrett Sutton over 35 years ago. Now, his son Ted is a licensed attorney working with him. Together, they've helped thousands of real estate investors form and maintain their LLCs and protect their assets. If you're trying to build a real estate portfolio, do not skip the LLC. Head over to corporatedirect.com/biggerpockets to schedule a free 15-minute consultation with an incorporating specialist. Mention Real Estate Rookie and get a $100 discount on your formation. That's corporatedirect.com/biggerpockets.
Whether you need to buy or sell, or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes to help you see new homes first. And they give you personalized recommendations based on the homes you like, so you can find the home that's just right for you, whether that's a cabin, a craftsman, or a castle. With the top-rated Redfin app, you can favorite homes, share listings with others, and schedule tours, even the same day, with a local Redfin agent who can help guide you through the whole home buying process. And if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents have the experience to help get you the best price possible for your home. That's because they sell twice as many homes as other agents. With a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards what matters most to you, like your next home. In fact, last year, Redfin saved home sellers $127 million. No matter where you are in your real estate journey, Redfin can help. Download the Redfin app to get started today.
This show is sponsored by Airbnb. Did you know that a long time ago, before I ever started my real estate business, I turned one of my first primary residences into an Airbnb? And that's the extra income that I needed from Airbnb that gave me the confidence to go out and work for myself and eventually quit my 9-to-5 job. And now I have dozens of Airbnbs all over the country. I've even partnered up with the old David Green on a recent property in Scottsdale to take our portfolio to the next level. And of course, we host it on Airbnb. But you don't need to be a full-time real estate investor to start on Airbnb. As a matter of fact, I was self-managing 10 properties while working my 9-to-5 job, so I know anybody can do it. Think about it this way. You're looking for extra income and going on a vacation. Wouldn't it be great to rent out your space and let your property pay for itself while you're gone? I did this one time. I pitched my wife and my roommate, because we were house hacking, on the idea of renting out our home, and it paid for all of our expenses on a trip to Mexico City. So go and give it a try. It might just change your life, just like it did mine. And I really do mean that. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. The dream of owning a vacation home can be daunting. From finding the best guests, to the maintenance, to organizing the cleaners after every guest day. With Vacasa, they make that dream into a reality. As a full-service vacation home management company with vacation homes in key destinations across the U.S., they know a thing about how to make owning a vacation home easy and profitable. On top of proactive property maintenance visits by professional local teams, a hospitality-driven booking platform, and around-the-clock support, Vacasa earns homeowners an average of 20% more revenue from their vacation homes. Vacasa is always thinking of ways to simplify the vacation home owning experience by putting your home to work for you. If you're looking to make more from your vacation home, work with the reliable property manager, and finally have peace of mind, partner with Vacasa at vacasa.com/biggerpockets. That's vacasa.com/biggerpockets.
Okay, welcome back. Our last question is from Jason Ide. Hey, Ashley and Tony, we increased our rent for our tenant by $100. Now the tenant, of course, brings up everything that's wrong in the property. She's saying the freezer doesn't work all of a sudden and the drawers are broken in the refrigerator. She's like, can you just buy me a new refrigerator? What? She wants us to put in a new microwave because the old one does not work anymore. We have responded quickly with previous problems and have fixed them in a timely fashion. I feel like if you break the drawers in the refrigerator, it's on you to get new ones. How would you go about answering her about the refrigerator and the microwave? I appreciate the response.
So Ash, let me ask you, because you're more the long-term rental expert here than I am. My initial thought is I 100% agree with you, Jason. If someone's breaking the fridge inside of my property, you're paying to get it fixed. But that's me coming from a slightly different perspective. So Ashley, I think the bigger question before we even kind of get into your specifics, and this is what I'm curious on for you, is what have you found as maybe the best practice when you're increasing rents on a tenant to make sure that the tide doesn't change and they become a little bit more aggressive with your, you know, negative in general?
Yeah. So especially when I'm taking over a property, I just purchased it and I'm inheriting tenants, I give them, especially if it's a large increase, if it is a small increase, you know, like there's been times we did a $5 increase across a 40 unit apartment building. And we wrote this little letter just saying, you know, the rising utility cost of, because we included water and property taxes have increased, you know, no one complained. It was $5. We justified it. But I like giving a reason as to why you, there's no reason you have to, but I try to find ways to justify it so there is least resistance. I also, especially with the inherited tenants, like to show what the comparables are. So if they moved out of my property, what would they have to pay to live in a comparable property? So I've gone as far as there was somebody that was paying $400 a month in rent and the market rent was $700. And I think I increased it to $600, but that was still a $200 increase per month, which is a lot of money for a person to have their rent increase that much over time. So that's a 50% increase. But I wrote a letter and I said, here are the addresses of the comparable units that you could move to. And this is what their monthly rent was. Each one of those was in right, like within walking distance of his property. And each one was more expensive than what I was, you know, going to end up charging him. So if you're able to show that, or you're able to show that it's really close to what other people are charging, if somewhere else is charging $50 less than maybe what you are, put it on there, because it is a headache to move. It's a pain. There's costs associated with moving, and most likely someone is not going to move because somewhere else is $50 cheaper per month. They may, but finding those comparables and kind of showing the resident as to, you know what, you're increasing the rent and it's justifiable. Then we also had Dion McNeely on recently, who talked about the binder strategy as to how he gives his tenants the increase. You guys can go back and look at that episode. I'll have Tony pulled it up right here while I go on and answer the freezer question here. So he says that this is their first increase and she's bringing up things that don't work. So this can often happen with a resident where they bring up problems when you confront them about not paying rent or different scenarios like this, or this, in this case, the increase. So as far as the freezer and the microwave, I would first go back to the lease agreement. Okay. Does your lease agreement specifically call out anything about the appliances? So for my properties, they're different. Some, I don't even include appliances anymore because they are such a hassle to get somebody in to fix them. If the fridge isn't working, then somebody's trying to get me to pay for all their groceries, things like that. So that I no longer include in a lot of my duplexes. And in some markets, you can get away with that. Some markets, you have to have appliances or else you're not going to get renters at all. So look at your comparables and what you can get away with. Also, if I have purchased a property that already has the appliances in it, I write into the lease agreement that these appliances are a courtesy and that as the landlord, we are not responsible for any repairs on the property. If the appliance needs to be removed, here's the number you call to have it disposed of. If it's not working, if you would like us to remove it, please put in a maintenance request and we'll have it, you know, hauled out. We have done that in some situations. So look in the lease agreement, see if it says anything about, you know, whose responsibility it is. As far as a microwave, I've never ever supplied a microwave. And I understand there's built-in microwaves and some properties. Try to stay away from that. So that's one less appliance, and have your resident just bring their own microwave. Put a nice hood vent or something above the stove instead of a microwave. So in this scenario, you know, if say the lease says that you're responsible for both. In your move-in inspection with this resident, does it show that the drawers were in working condition, that there was nothing wrong with them? Can you prove that when they moved into that property that the drawers were great? If they were, then yes, let them know the price of what that's going to cost and say you can Amazon ship it to their house and you'll add the cost onto their next rent payment. Or you can ask them that, just tell them it's their responsibility and they can go ahead and purchase a new one. In something like this, I would be more eager to assist in the process to make sure that this is going to be the correct way of doing that.
Ash, one follow-up question on that. Do you use any software like when you're doing that pre-move-in walkthrough to like document everything, or how do you have evidence of what it looked like before they took possession of the unit?
I have an inspection list, and it's an AppFolio is the software that we use. And so it's each time the maintenance person is going through the same checklist of here's what we're looking at, taking pictures. And then the resident also has like 48 hours to report anything to us that maybe was missed in the inspection. So usually when you're going through the inspection, it's your first time getting the keys into the property. You maybe saw it at your showing, but you're usually not, you know, flushing the toilet, or, you know, we'll do those things on inspection, but there might be little things like, oh, when you sit down on the toilet seat slides or something like that, you know? So we always give them some time to notify us of other issues that have come up, and we add them to the inspection, or like in the case of like the toilet seat, we would make a maintenance request and add that. Or maybe they noticed in the one closet, there's a rip in the carpet, or there's, you know, paint missing on one side or something like that, that we always give them that time to add it onto their inspection.
Yeah, I love the idea of having like some kind of documented evidence of the condition of the property. We do that after pretty much every time we clean a property for one of our short-term rentals. Our cleaners are taking photos of the condition of the property to show what it looks like. So I've given this example before, but it's like we had a guest who stayed at one of our properties with a hot tub and complained that, you know, they got some kind of like skin rash or something from the hot tub because the water wasn't clean. And we were able to pull up our photos before that guest checked in. And we had a photo of the water showing it was clean and clear. And we had a photo of the test strips of the water to show that the water was correctly chemically balanced. So we were able to go back to that person and say, the water got dirty. It's probably because of something that you did, you know, and not because we gave it to you that way. So I always like the idea of having that as like a CYA, you know, in case the tenant, the guest tries to claim that something was broken when in reality it was in good working condition when you gave it to him.
And what software are you using for that?
We use Breezeway for that. And it's a pretty cool tool that allows you to build up these different checklists. And we do it during the term. We do it during the cleans as well. So yeah, Breezeway is a tool that we use. And guys, just like as a side note, a lot of the tools that I use, I know I drop a lot of them. If you go to the realestaterobinsons.com/free tools, it just lists out like everything we use for checklists, for pricing, for our guidebooks, for all that stuff. So check it out.
Thank you guys so much for joining us for this week's Rookie Reply. If you want to follow Tony or I on social media, you can find the links in the show notes. Thank you guys so much for listening or watching. If you're on YouTube, make sure you hit that like button and subscribe so you can get updates on the newest videos. Don't forget to join our Real Estate Rookie Facebook group. I'm Ashley and he's Tony, and we'll see you guys next time. The market is changing and finding your way can be tricky. Rates shift, headlines whirl, but your goal hasn't changed. You want financial freedom. And the best investors know it's not about timing the market, it's about time in the market. If you're ready to get into the real estate investing game or take your game to the next level, finding an investor-friendly agent is your next step. With BiggerPockets Agent Finder, you can find the right agent in minutes. Just head to biggerpockets.com/deals, enter a few details about what and where you want to buy, and boom, instantly match with an investor-friendly agent who fits the bill. These local market experts can help you navigate the neighborhoods, analyze the numbers, and take action with confidence once and for all. This free resource is only available at biggerpockets.com/deals. Get an agent, get the deal, and get closer to financial freedom at biggerpockets.com/deals. That's biggerpockets.com/deals to find your investor-friendly agent today. The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only.
Past performance is not indicative of future results, and all host and participant opinions are their own.
Investment in any asset, real estate included, involves risk. Use your best judgment and consult with qualified advisors before investing. Only risk capital you can afford to lose.
Bigger Pockets LLC disclaims all liability for direct, indirect, consequential, or other damages arising from reliance upon information presented in this podcast.